I'm Dr. Sarah, a licensed chiropractor.
And I'm Val, clinical research enthusiast and international board-certified lactation consultant.
We are passionate about helping you navigate women's health and wellness topics naturally.
We bring the information and options
so you can make empowered choices.
This is the Empowered Women podcast. Just a reminder, the information contained in this podcast is for educational purposes only and is not intended to diagnose, treat, or cure any disease or illness or be taken as medical advice. Always check with your healthcare provider for medical advice.
I'm just going to do a little disclaimer here.
Oh!
Because if you have little ears in the car, or if you're a close friend and you don't want to hear about it, we're going to talk about breastfeeding and the sexualization of breast tissue.
Boom. Breastfeeding and sex. That's what this episode. Well, I was going to say at the start of our episode anyway, our podcast has an explicit warning. It kind of cracks me up. It shouldn't, but it does. And I mean, I feel kind of bad, but I curse like a sailor. And I feel as if this is our space to be
candid,
normal, and real. Normal. And I will be honest, Sarah and I like to talk about a lot of
scientific topics,
but this is not a medical podcast or a podcast where it's going to be like professional conversation about a scientific
I just violently shook my head no.
I feel like this is our space to express ourselves and to be as real and normal as possible outside of our professions while still being
informational.
Yes. Informative, right?
Informative.
No, I was trying to think of the word.
Informative. I'm just thinking I know my mother-in-law. You listen to this. I don't know that you want to listen to this episode.
It's a shame. I really have tried to clean up my potty mouth over the years. And I think I have. I had an ex tell me once, I can't introduce you to my mother because of the way that you... Well, clearly that didn't fucking work out.
You're like, fine, I don't want to meet her anyways.
My mother-in-law is amazing. But, I'm like, okay. Like, he was joking, but he wasn't joking. I think it actually bothered him, like, how trashy I probably was with my mouth. So, I don't know.
Your mother-in-law for a very long time, right?
Yes, I have. And you know what? She got me a Tumblr a couple Christmases ago that said, "You're a great daughter-in-law. Keep that shit up." And I was like, this is how I know that we were meant for each other, Betty.
Well... Your mother-in-law's name's Betty?
Yes, she is.
Can I tell you that's one of my favorite names? That's my grandmother's name.
Really?
Name Betty.
My mother-in-law's the best, and she's freaking adorable. She's not even 5 foot.
I love an itty-bitty Betty.
She's cool. She's really cool. Okay, so today we are talking about...
Wait. If we ever get merch... I'm going to make a shirt that says, "I love a little itty bitty Betty."
Oh my God. She'll love it. I'm not going to talk about the type of merch my mother-in-law has sold in the past on this podcast.
Awesome.
But she would love that. She loves merch.
I love it. Itty bitty Betty. Yep. Okay. Anyways, continue, Val.
So I saw a reel on Instagram, was it like a week or two ago? I think I sent this to you and I'm like, oh, we got to talk about this topic. But it was from, I want to give this person credit because they totally deserve it. It's called the Breastfeeding Mentor.
Yes,
I forget her name, but she's on Instagram, so give her a follow. She's flipping amazing. Super pro breastfeeding and very, very informative and educational accounts. But she was talking about, it's Maternal Mental Health Month in May. And one of the topics was, you know, breastfeeding and sex. And it started, when I saw the reel, it was at the point where she said about how they can be a no-go zone.
No-go zone.
Yes, for a while. But she would also had gotten into, like, the sexualization of them in general in this reel. But it was just all good. And I was like, Sarah, we have to talk about this because I don't think people that intend to nurse or breastfeed even think about the whole, like, sexual aspect after the baby.
Yeah.
There's a lot that plays into so many aspects of that, right?
Well, so I think I've said it on this podcast before. I really thought that I was, like, an outlier for wanting to be intimate after having Eli.
Yeah.
And a lot of that actually, like, the more I thought about it over the last couple weeks, the more I realized it had to do with, like, breastfeeding.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to be touched. As far as I was concerned, like, my intimacy was between, like, me and Eli at that point.
So you didn't want to be intimate at all?
Mm-mm. 9 months.
Yeah. So I think this is really interesting because, I mean, knowing what I know as an IBCLC, obviously, there's so many things that play into this. A lot of it is hormonal, right?
Right.
And a lot of it has to do with being tired and fatigue and mental health. And, you know, don't
even think about the breastfeeding part.
It's not even that. And then it's interesting because people can have a really high libido when they're breastfeeding or low, or it can kind of, like, wax and wane, so it can come and go. But I was reading a research article today about this in preparation for us talking, and they basically said the 12 to 24 months after you have a baby, couples should expect changes in intimacy, period. This is outside of breastfeeding. And then the article was about breastfeeding and intimacy, but they're saying when you add lactation into the mix, expect it to be even more complicated.
Yes.
Because there's a lot of things, this like doesn't get talked about at all in any breastfeeding class.
I felt like a freak.
Yeah, in any childbirth education, but it affects both partners.
Right.
Whether your partner is male, female, or however they identify. Like, it's going to affect both of you because it matters.
Right. I mean, there's a reason you have a baby to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
Intimacy.
Well, and breast, especially in our culture, again, this is very cultural, and in our society, they're very, very much sexualized. And I mean, I don't want to, that's not necessarily a great thing, but they are a sexual part of our body, and they have, you know, erectile tissue on them, you know, like they're intimate and they're part of people's intimacy. So I'm not going to downplay that at all, but we do not view them as for food here when that is their primary function.
I wonder how this is like in like tribes, like how... I mean, breast tissue is not sexualized. It's like,
so
it's just there, out.
Yeah. And we were talking about this yesterday at the event because one of the therapists that works at Lisey's office or has space there, she was listening to us talk about this. And she had mentioned something about, I feel like, you know, sexualization of breasts have a lot to do with, you know, breastfeeding in society and culture in general. And I'm like, no, you're absolutely right. And then it plays a big part in intimacy and your life after that too. Mm-hmm. Because before you have a baby, you don't necessarily view them as a food source. And then once you start breastfeeding, you get kind of a lot of women. And I've talked about this in front of other women and they've agreed with me. You're like, oh no. That's for the baby. Like, that's their food. Like, don't even, like, this is weird. Like, it's not okay. Like, I can't do that stuff with them anymore.
Well, it's like, for me, it took 3 months to establish breastfeeding. Mm-hmm. So, like a third of the time it took for us to be intimate again. Like, I, like, do not mess with the way I am trying to feed this baby because nothing's working.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, you finally establish and it's like, do not interfere with what we know is working.
Mm-hmm.
Like, don't even, because this is what he needs. Like, as in Eli.
It's weird. It's so weird. And I think everybody's experience is so different. And I've had two babies and two very different experiences because I didn't really think it would be an issue. And then when we had Bianca, like it was an issue. About it. I was like, whoa, no, I can't. It's so weird. Don't touch them. Don't go near them. Mm-hmm. And then I've heard other women who were much older say, don't worry, that comes back. And I would think to myself, how, I don't understand. Like, I don't know if I could ever view them like that again. But it does. It did come back. And then when I had Jude, I felt completely different. There was, like, no issue at all. Yeah, I also had a very different, like, I also had very different sex drive. Like, I think my hormones were different. I mean, like, after I had Jude, like, I felt like I could have had sex. And that's apparently very normal when the oxytocin, like...
Yeah, because you didn't have an epidural or anything.
Yes, it was, I think it had a lot to do with the, with my, well, I didn't have an epidural the first time, but Pitocin.
Oh, yeah. They
say it doesn't interfere with oxytocin, but it's totally, it was just completely different postpartum experience. And I did, like, there was no, like, it was euphoric. Her birth, but I didn't realize it could actually be, like, different. And then I'm like, oh, I have hormones that I'm, like, recognizing. I'm like, is this normal? Like, can you're supposed to have a sex drive like before like 6 weeks? Like, this is bizarre.
Yeah, and I think that's why I felt so weird, is because like some of my friends were fine, mm-hmm. but they were, it was after baby number two.
Yeah.
But then whenever I would talk to people who were like after baby number one friend in particular, she was like, oh no, like it was like 9 or 10 months. Like, mm-hmm. I didn't want to be touched.
Yeah, it's hard.
I mean, it could come to like the transitional, like moving just into motherhood in general.
Yes. It's moving into parenthood and a lot of the mental stress too that comes with that.
I wonder if it's like, oh, I'm a parent now. Like, ugh.
I don't know. Maybe. I mean, I feel like that could be a part of it.
Especially because like for us, like our child was in our room. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it was a subconscious
thing. Was weird for Chris. That was not weird for me.
Yeah.
Like he was like, oh no, like you, I'm like, well, what, like, how do you think it's going to happen? Because she's little and she's sleeping and it's just, I'm sorry. Like, I'm not, what are we going to move her every time? Like,
what do you want? What do you want to do here?
We move her. She's seven. So like when she's in our bed, like somebody has to move her.
Yeah.
To happen. But it's like, okay, come on. Like, no. But everybody feels differently about it. Mm-hmm. So like if it does bother, it could be a mental block. Like, you know, the baby's there or they cry and they interrupt everything.
Right.
So there's that too.
I was like, one of my biggest things was like, you know, eventually whenever the drive came back, it was like, it did not feel the same.
It doesn't. And I
freaking hated it.
Yeah, it hurt. I remember with Bianca.
I was like, I know you're touching me, but I cannot feel it.
Yeah, it's not. And this goes back to the whole, oh, 6 weeks, you're good. No, right. God. I mean, like, you better like, things are, I don't like, it's just not normal for a long time. I don't know how to explain it. And it's not that it's so strange. I think with Bianca, we tried at like, you get the clearance and I'm like, oh, awesome. This is great. Like, we're just going to go back to life, you know? And I'm like, yeah, no, we tried in 6 weeks.
Life is not the same.
We waited again until 12 weeks. And I was like, all right, I'm so pumped. Like, it's really, we're going to do it this time and it's going to be great. And then we tried and I was like, no, abort mission, take it out. I don't know what that's, I don't know what's happening, but it is not right.
Nothing, I don't know how to feel. Right.
It was like, I felt horrible. I was like, I'm done. I don't freaking try this like ever again. Like, and it was, you know, when it was better once I healed my DR, and that was probably at like 9 months, and then everything was different.
Well, you know, there's a lot to be said about, like, the entire spiritual journey about, like, you eventually, like, you view
mm-hmm.
yourself as, like, a sacred space.
Yeah.
And it feels like you're, like, literally penetrating that sacred space.
Mm-hmm.
This has just got way deep woo-woo.
No, it's true. And, like, you had mentioned before, we're biologically programmed we're biologically programmed to want to bond with that baby.
Mm-hmm.
And to, you know, the feelings that we have are more. So we were chatting, bonding with the baby, and how that takes priority over your partner,
mm-hmm.
especially right after birth. And all those good hormones are designed to do that, which mm-hmm. is kind of tough to like accept, I think, for both people, but you can't fight it sometimes biologically.
No. And I mean, I remember being slightly offended when my mom said, like, you're not going to want the baby in your room with you. Like, you need that time for you and Mike. And like, I was like really offended because I was like, Mike and I will be fine. Like, there's yeah. more ways to be together than just inside our bedroom. Like, but like, that space became about bonding with
yeah,
Eli.
It does.
So when you get, honestly, it's like you get used to being in a pattern of just like becoming a mom that, yeah, your partner does get forgotten a little bit.
They do. And I do feel like there's a difference with subsequent babies, but it could also depend on whether the mom had a good delivery or whether there was birth trauma or whether there was a lot of injury to, like, you know, all those really sensitive areas. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, you know, that has to play a big role in it. But I know, like, for us, for the second one, it was like, I actually felt like I felt very much in more in love with Chris after each baby. But with the second, it was definitely like a sense of like, oh, I'm so in love with you. Like, I want to be intimate, which was bizarre because we just had a baby, you know, right. It was like we all were bonding and we were all sleeping in bed together. And there's this sense of, you know, love and community. Yeah. And it feels very different than it does the first time when it shakes your world. Because
right.
it rocks your world when you just have not had a child before. And it, I think maybe like you're so stressed and focused on other things then instead of just enjoying like the beauty of it. Because
right.
it really is like beautiful and intimate. And I think some people can have, like, even the research says, you know, everybody feels different.
Well, you know, before we started trying to even have a baby, like, Mike and I very much put our businesses first.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
Like, I put my job first. He like was working in a new practice, and then he had like an ulcerative colitis flare up. So like, we very much like, it was almost like we were in two separate places.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as we had the miscarriage, actually, is when I like pretty much put my life on halt, and that I've never been more in love with Mike than the way that he responded to us having a miscarriage.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's like once you have that familial
yeah.
drive and tie yeah, it feels real. That's something that I think a lot of people miss.
Mm-hmm.
In the postpartum with the first.
Oh, yeah. You don't get to.
Your world.
You soak it up and you enjoy it. And I really tried to make sure I did that the first time because people say that, like,
yeah.
enjoy it. You're going to miss, like, all those things. But it's just so life-changing. I don't know that you can enjoy it in the way that you can once you've already been through it.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see that.
Like, I think there's, and again, it probably just depends on so many factors. You know, that
like you're seeing a baby through your older child's eyes then too.
Yeah. 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 Which is different, but it's just, it's interesting. And I'm curious to see what your experience is going to be the second time, especially compared to your first time.
Me too.
Yeah, I love hearing, and I love talking to moms that have had multiple children, like even more than two,
yeah.
because they've had, you know, they obviously have been through it so many times.
Yeah.
And I feel like it just becomes like second nature at that point in a good way. But then it could just depend on their birth. Like, you know, you could just end up with like a different situation though one time.
Right. Right.
But another big piece of this, like I kept saying, was hormonal, because, you know, prolactin and estrogen are low when you're breastfeeding. And the lower estrogen levels affect, you know, things like vaginal lubrication and, you know, even like sex drive and things like that. And then they're replaced with like higher levels of prolactin and oxytocin. Now, the whole oxytocin thing is great for like the love and the bonding and the feel good stuff. And maybe that is what kind of, you know, puts people in that euphoria that do feel like they have a sex drive. But with the oxytocin too, that triggers milk ejection reflex. So another thing, besides issues that you could have as far as like lubrication is concerned when you're breastfeeding, because people can complain like that's a big issue for them.
Right.
People don't really understand like you can leak
right
when you're having sex. Like women like have like milk ejection reflexes when they have orgasms or when they have like an oxytocin surge, like they're excited.
Never had that happen. Like, that would freak me out.
Yeah. Oh, it's totally happened to me with Bianca so many times. Like,
yeah, you breastfed her for a long time.
Well, like, even in that first year, like, I used to, like, think about things that put me in a good mood. Like, I think I told you this before. I was thinking about a dessert one time, and I just started speaking. Like, it doesn't necessarily have to be, like, a sexual thing.
Right.
It's just related to, like, the release of oxytocin in your system. It's, like, really funny. Now, with Jude, like, I don't think I leaked as much with, like, as far as, like, intimacy goes, but I don't know. I don't know. I was so much more experienced at that point. Like, I don't think I cared. I was probably just like, oh, where's the sheet? Like, just wipe that up.
Do you feel like your sexual drives and desires changed with each pregnancy then?
During the pregnancy?
Both, I guess.
Like, after. I feel like, I think women in general have higher sex drive during their pregnancy.
Yeah.
I think with Jude, it actually went down towards the end, which I was surprised about, because then we were just trying to get him out at the end. And like,
yeah, it was like not fun. It was like,
I really didn't want to. And like, I took one for the team, because I was like, I feel like we need to do this. So like, things get moving here.
So much fun.
And then I was like, this is so bad. I'm like, I don't recommend this to anybody over 40 weeks pregnant. It was horrible. No, I think everyone feels different about it. I mean, at that point, but then right, I mean, immediately afterwards, I felt like I was like, hormonally, it was very different with the second pregnancy. And that could be because, I don't know, it was a boy. I don't really know. I just, it's very bizarre, like the different experiences that you can have between child to child and the same, having the same body. You know what I mean?
Because it's like, I feel like, because I was almost like, I guess disappointed is the word I would use for like the way things felt after. I was disappointed in my body that, like, I had sensitivity issues.
Like, it was lackluster?
And it, like, it wasn't that, like, we were doing anything different. It was just because my sensitivity levels were so low that it was, like, disappointing.
Yeah.
For me. And, like, almost like I was doing something wrong.
But, I mean, and this goes into, like, the whole breast aspect, too, because the sensitivity with people's nipples and their breast tissue in general changes, too.
Well, you know, I was told to scar my nipples.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they could be more sensitive. They could be – you could be in pain. There could be discomfort. They could be less sensitive, like if there was like damage there, mm-hmm. You know. And there's also – I mean, that's the same thing I feel like – you know, there's tissue damage with the vagina. Like, that takes time to heal. That's why I think people really don't feel like it's awesome until, like, after the baby's, like, 9 or 10 months. Like, I don't really think that whole area is, like, ready for a long time.
And I think it goes back to what you said at the beginning of this episode. Like, this is why, like, 6 weeks
is ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
It's a crapshoot. I don't even know why.
That's what I was going to say. Who was it, you that had said something yesterday? Or was it that lady that was talking about tribes where it was like in different cultures, women are expected to be celibate, but the man can just do whatever.
There's actually like, I think there's one or two tribes in Africa that when a woman is breastfeeding, the expectation culturally is that they remain celibate. So you're not supposed to have sex when you are breastfeeding. So that could be, I mean,
that could be years.
Quite a bit of time in a part of the world where, you know, they're
especially, probably tribal nations.
Yeah, like, they're probably practicing extended breastfeeding. Well, what we call extended breastfeeding, which is natural term weaning. And the men don't have to be celibate. So it's like, I guess if you know, we were talking about this yesterday with culture, what we view as maybe not the norm, you know, that's so normal for them. So like, it's, you can't really pass judgment, you know, on other countries or cultures where.
Do those, you know, particular tribes have monogamous relationships to begin with?
Right. That's actually a great question. I'm not sure. I would have to look that up specifically because I do have the name of the tribe, but I just never really looked into whether that was that's practiced, you know, in general, because like it's normal to take multiple wives in some cultures. So right. I don't know. But yeah, that's really interesting too. And there's also theories and research, and I'm gonna link this article for everybody to read if they want. It's called Sex and Breastfeeding, an Educational Perspective by Viola Palomino. And it was really good because it goes into so many different things. But there's also a biological theory that someone's sex drive is decreased when they're breastfeeding because that is, at the time, you're focused on that child and nourishing that child. It's a protective mechanism, theoretically, against getting pregnant again.
Right.
Because that's not the priority.
Right.
It's reproducing at that time and getting pregnant again. So it makes sense that biologically, the hormonal setup in our body would be to decrease the desire to have sex, especially they say like those first couple of months.
Well, if you think about it, like going back to like tribal nations, it's like women are held in like pretty high regards. Especially like, well, some,
I think it depends on the culture.
It also depends like how you view like women's rights and stuff like that in different, in like these third world countries. But like I'm wondering if like in those particular areas, it's like a woman that's breastfeeding is like considered sacred. And that's why like celibacy is like recommended. Do you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah. I don't know. I would have to research that particular, you know, aspect of it more.
I just want to know why.
Yeah.
Is it like a sacredness? Is it like a...
I don't know. I
have to, yeah. Is it like a population? Like,
I'll link it in here. Like, there's information about it. And if people want to read more, there might be additional info in there. And we'll put it in the show notes. And then maybe you and I can see as well. There was another, and it's like, again, we talked about this yesterday, but then there's places like Mongolia where they nurse until children are 7 or 8 and women are held in very high regard.
Mm-hmm.
And that is looked very highly upon and supported. And like, you are amazing. And that is your, you know, a big part of your role in having a child and raising them is the ability to do that. And women are very well respected, like, as far as that's concerned. So
when you said that yesterday, all I could think of was Game of Thrones. Yes. Lysa Arryn.
Yes. Like,
when you meet her, she's nursing Robin.
Mm-hmm. They think extended breastfeeding, and you think of those scenes with him. Like,
yeah. But he was, like, 10, 12.
He was older. Yeah. I mean, unless, I don't know. I didn't know if they were like, he was just speaking well for the time. You know what I mean? Like, he was like esteemed, but I couldn't figure out like how old he was supposed to be.
He's very sickly.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyways.
I'm trying to think of what else I wanted to touch on with that, with this whole like concept.
Well, I think it's just interesting with just what you said, like culturally, like how would you define Mongolia as far as like status in the world?
I mean, I wouldn't define them as like remote, you know, or what if you look up like what they would consider?
Let's see here. China, Mongolia, North Korea, or Vietnam are listed under both second and third world. So like,
oh, they are considered, yeah.
So like that, I think that comes along with the fact that like we're a first world country. Really,
mm-hmm.
It's much different. A lot of women in our culture are pushed, you know, to not breastfeed for very long.
Mm-hmm.
It's, as we talked to a mom yesterday, I was like, she kind of does it in like secret because like she doesn't want people to know that she's been nursing past a year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's only a year.
I mean, a lot of people do that. I mean,
yeah,
it's just not, it's not culturally accepted enough for people to just walk around nursing toddlers and small children, because everybody, a lot of people have been conditioned to think that there's something wrong with it. Well, I mean, you even have instances like, I'm in a lot of like breastfeeding groups, and you have instances where, you know, people get reported to CPS for, and like child services in other countries for nursing their children past babyhood and toddlerhood. And that's where experts like IBCLCs get called in, you know, to court cases and to, you know, things like that, custody disputes where there's children breastfeeding and then the parents are separated or divorced. Like, I mean, can you imagine, like, that's a big, that like rips my heart out. You know, I've nursed two children and I'm still nursing a toddler, and I'm sick in my stomach when I think of him, you know, if we were to get separated, having to be forced to be away from me, you know, because we're divorced or separated and not be able to have what he needs.
Yeah.
With me. I mean, like, it's, can you imagine as a parent what that feels like? I really like,
especially if there's not like the partner support of breastfeeding anymore.
And I, you know, all I can say is, you know, like, shame on you if you are a person that thinks that somebody should be reported for that, because you're not educated. I'm sorry. You need to educate yourself on the benefits, and we as a culture need to stop looking at it as this disgusting taboo thing.
And, you know, like, there's a lot of things that should never be said to other people. Like, it's gotten so bad in the last 3 years. Like, we just feel like we're entitled to give our opinions on everything whenever you don't know somebody's history at all.
Well, and remember, everybody sits behind their computer screen now, and I think lashes out very, you know, disrespectfully, when maybe in public I would just look away or scoff and look away. Not me, but you mean, you know what I mean? Like, and you know,
I think the second factor to this is that, like, first world countries, let's be honest, like, a lot of people have like sex addictions and are addicted to pornography and like,
well, again, it's over-sexualization of women's breasts here. You know, we don't walk out with our breasts exposed, and therefore it's not something that, it's not seen as a food source.
Right.
When that's what it is. I mean, if you look
like at the stages, second and third world countries, like, they don't necessarily have that problem.
Right. If you look at the stages of lactation, the breasts are actually not fully developed until a woman lactates. Like, anatomy and physiology of breastfeeding, like, that is that they were designed to feed babies, they were designed to lactate. And until you get pregnant and all of the things that need to take place then, after that, and, you know, to lactate happen, you're technically, you know, the breast is not actually, you know, fully functioning as an organ.
That's wild to think about.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because, like, that's like 3 decades of somebody's life sometimes.
Super interesting. And I mean, think about how your areola changes, your nipple changes. People would say, oh, everything got darker after I, well, that actually is happening. Yeah. And there's a reason for that. It's so the baby can see it better.
Right.
It's a bullseye. It's like everything that happened is so beautifully designed and in sync. You know what I mean? Like with pregnancy and your breast and the baby to work together.
Think about how many people just do not even know that.
Mm-hmm.
Like young men actually knew that. Like, well, how would they view breast tissue then? Probably the same, but like at least they would have an understanding.
I mean, it's really miraculous.
Yeah.
It's like, it's super cool. It's super fascinating. The whole science of it is so cool. And we've come so far. The other thing this article touches on, since we're talking about the over-sexualization of breast, is like partners being interested in nursing from their lactating partner. So like, that's a thing. I'm just throwing it out there. I was like, do I want to bring this up or not?
Yes, you want to bring this up.
I'm going to bring it up. I am going to bring it up because
how often does that happen?
I don't want people to feel weird about this. I don't want people to think it's, I actually have a friend who was dating somebody. Obviously I'm not going to say who it is.
Right.
I was like, so like, it's so cool when you know, people can be open about things like this, but she was nursing her toddler and the guy she was dating was like really into the fact that she was, like, he asked if he could like nurse, like, and like, she's like, yeah, sure. He's, you know, it's like, people are like into, like, not in a, I don't know if it's a fetish. I wouldn't say it's a fetish. Like, I think it is for some people, but I think people's partners are just curious. Yeah.
You know what, there's I think about this sometimes, like I've thought about this a lot during my pregnancy. There's that movie, it's like Jason Bateman and Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah.
They switch bodies. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
It's called The Switch Up, right?
It's something, yes. We've seen it like multiple times.
Ryan Reynolds has a fetish with like being intimate with like this pregnant woman.
Yeah.
And it's like, man, I wonder if people really do have fetishes about like nursing.
Well, I don't think it's always like a bad thing. Like, I think maybe there's just certain things that like turn people on. Like, I don't know. And is that like bad that like someone, you know, I thought it was cool, A, that she shared that with us, but B, that like this guy was like, you know, I've said to my husband, like, especially when I've, like, been leaking before, I'm like, oh, you want to try it from the tap? And, like, I mean, I wouldn't care, but he's, like, not. He's like, no, I'll try it out of a cup. I'm good. I'm like, why? Why is that weird? I'm like, I don't think it's weird. He's like, no.
I want to keep my beverages and my sex life separate. Thank you.
I don't know. I feel like once
I've tried it in my coffee before.
I've not tried into my coffee. I have tried my own breast milk. I don't know. I would love to hear if people have tried their own breast milk. I know plenty of women that have.
Every woman has. Like, let's be honest. If you've pumped and you have extra, you know that you've dipped a finger in.
I don't understand how you cannot. Like, you're so curious. It's supposed to be super sweet. I mean, it is. Yeah.
I'm just like, wow, that guy, he had a lot of, that takes a lot of courage to be like, can I try it?
Like, yeah, why the heck not? You know, it's like, what else are we doing? You
have to be like, how long have we been dating? Yeah, I'm wondering, like, if somebody asked me that and we were only dating, like, how would I feel about
that? You're like, how do I feel about
like that? What is the parameters on letting someone nurse?
I'll hand express them for you when it comes.
Yeah, it's like 1 month hand expression.
Oh my god.
I have no idea. I don't know what I would do.
I was gonna, like, oh my god.
That is absolutely something Mike has never asked me, and I don't think he would ever want, like, he wouldn't even try it out of a bottle.
Have you heard of the whole, this is like, I know this has been around for a while, but I think it's been making its way, like, around social media more, and the news, like, bodybuilders using breast milk.
Yes, I've seen this.
Yeah, we watched a special on this. I think it was called, like, Wellness. I don't know. Chris and I watched, like, a series, like, a couple years ago, maybe during COVID, and one of them was on breast milk, and of course I had to watch that one. And it was like how people were selling it to bodybuilders that were using it for muscle gains.
Hashtag gains.
What is superfood? I mean, think about it. It is like our first food.
Yet we don't talk about how amazing it is.
Yeah. And they clearly know it's amazing. People want to use it for their muscles, guys.
Women. Men are buying breast milk on the black market to get muscles.
Yes, and I must say, as a professional, I do not recommend that. Don't sell your breast milk to people using it for bodybuilding.
Please don't do that. Unless they pay you a lot of money. Just kidding.
There are children that need the breast milk.
Yeah, share the drop.
You do need it.
Or put it on share the drop.
Yes, you can donate it to milk banks or community milk share. Just please, you know, don't be doing that.
That's wild.
Yeah. Yep. Crazy, right? What else? Can you think of anything else related to breastfeeding and sex?
Breastfeeding, sex. No, I mean, like, I didn't have an issue with it until, like, after that 9 months. And, like, all the fears I thought I had over it, like, kind of poofed within, like, a month after that initial, like, intimacy. You know what I mean? Like, you have all these fears and, like, subconscious thoughts, and then, like, things feel bad, and then it's like, I'm, like, looking at a picture of a bicycle. It's like getting on a bike.
Yeah. Like,
I guess you got to look at it this way, especially with, like, decreased sensitivity. Like, what do we do when we have scars, right? You're like, you have to work the scar in order to, like, increase and get your sensitivity back. Like, that is tissue that you have to heal. So, like, physical touch is best for that.
When you're ready.
When you're ready. But that's something that, like, without even being sexual, like, stimulating yourself so that your sensitivity comes back and you're not, like, totally thrown off guard by the fact that, like, I feel nothing.
Well, and pelvic floor therapists. Yeah. Talk about that a lot and have people do that a lot and use things other than sexual intercourse, you know, to when you're restoring your pelvic floor or when you're trying to, like, restore, you know, not, you know, have touch to that area without it being, you know, an issue.
Exactly.
Well, we talked a lot tonight about this. I feel like we covered a lot of good things.
Yep. It's not weird if you want to wait. It's not weird if you want to get up and go again.
Like, it's not weird if you want to hand express breast milk for people to try.
It is not weird if you want your boyfriend of 1 week to, just kidding. That was not the case. I'm throwing out numbers.
Oh my God.
I don't even know. It's not weird. Nothing's weird. It's you do you. Hashtag you do you. Hashtag what? Little itty bitty Betty.
Oh my God. My mother-in-law. I don't really know that she wants to listen to this episode though, but
you let her know that I've dropped hashtag itty bitty Betty.
She's gonna love it. I'm gonna tell her you coined it. Thanks. I am going to link the research paper in the show notes. I'm going to try and find some more information on the tribe we chatted about. I'll find some info on Mongolia and share it with everybody. And then, yeah, enjoy, guys. Enjoy your week. Let us know your thoughts on breastfeeding and sex. We want to hear about it. And we'll talk to you soon.
Always want to hear about it. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
If you enjoyed this podcast and want to hear more like it, make sure you subscribe to the Empowered Women Pod and rate us 5 stars. Please feel free to also write a review on the podcast. It really does help to spread the Empowered Women message, and it moves us up in the podcast rankings. Plus, we love to hear from our listeners. You can follow us on Instagram at Empowered Women Pod, or if you have a question and want to reach out to Val or I, you can email us at empoweredwomenpod@icloud.com.